Good afternoon. My name is Congresswoman Kathy Hochul, and this interview is being conducted for the Veterans History Project in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. Today is December 29th, 2011, and this interview is taking place in Williamsville, New York. I'm interviewing Mr. Ted Wilkinson, who was born in Buffalo, New York, on October 25th, 1949. Mr. Wilkinson served in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War and finished his military career with the rank of sergeant. Assisting me in this interview is Mr. Brad Fuhrer. First of all, thank you for being here, and thank you for your service on my Veterans Advisory Council as well. I'm honored to have you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Thank you. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and the reasons you joined the Army?
Well, I joined the Army because I chose the Army because my father was in the Army. He was in Pearl Harbor when they bombed Pearl Harbor in 1941 in Schofield Barracks, and my father went from island to island, Guadalcanal to Auckland, right to the Philippine Islands, and he said that he wasn't fond of Marines. He said the Marines would take the beach and then the Army would go in and do it, and the Marines wanted all the glory and the Army didn't get any, so there's no way I would be able to join the Marines. So I joined the Army for tradition.
And how old were you when you joined the Army?
I was 19.
19 years old. Yeah. Just out of high school?
The average age of a Vietnam veteran was 19. In World War II, it was 26.
What a difference.
So, yes.
Those are just kids. You were just barely a kid yourself.
Yes.
Now, did your father used to tell about his stories all the time? A lot of people from World War II really didn't talk about it very much. What did you find with your dad?
He talked some. My father died when I was 16, so in 1964, so I didn't get a chance to really appreciate his stories and didn't know enough to ask the right questions and that. But he did tell me a few of the stories. His platoon, they actually made the movie We From Here to Eternity about my father's platoon. And he was portrayed in the movie.
Well, that's a bit of history itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a great story. So your dad never knew you made it to the Army, did he?
No.
What'd your mom think when you joined?
Well, my mother really didn't. She knew if you joined the Army in 1969, you were going to Vietnam. So yeah. She did not really. She says, you know, we can look for a medical reason for you to not to go. And I said, well, I'd want to go. So.
Did you have other friends who were going?
I had a neighbor of mine. Of course, I lived in the country, and a neighbor's a mile away. So he was shot in 1967 and came home, and he was very bad wounded. And then in 1968, one of my closest friends was killed in Khe Sanh. So this gave me to want to go over there and just to make a statement that they're not going to push us around.
Yeah. So you really wanted to do it in their memory as well?
Yes. Right,
someone
exactly.
Else might have been more scared off by that. You lose your best friend or you lose a friend like that. And you stepped right up and answered the call, didn't you?
Yes, exactly. And that's, I wanted to go in for their name and, like you say, for their memory.
Were there already starting to be protests at the time or people opposed to the war?
Exactly.
Was that a tough thing to do to enlist at the time? What was going on in your community at that time?
Well, I live in a small community, and it wasn't very bad, but in the cities and where it's populated, the protesting was bad, very bad. I know that one friend of mine told you was shot. His sister was a protester, and she felt bad to this day that she protested because he was actually a hero in Vietnam. So, and There was a lot of incidents, more when I came back. And when I came back, when we were told not to wear uniforms home really too much on the plane back. If you were coming back from Vietnam at Travis Air Force Base. And when I got married, my brother, he was a Marine.
Mm-hmm. He didn't listen to your dad.
No, he was too young. But he was my best man at my wedding. And on our bachelor party going out, there was a lot of disruption because my brother wore his uniform and one thing led to another. And so there was a lot of protesting going on. It wasn't popular to be in the military.
What year would that have been?
That was 1978, so mm-hmm. it was quite a bit after the war. But when I first met my wife, I went for a few weeks. I didn't ever told her. I told her I was in the service, but not in Vietnam.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you think that the country learned a lesson from that and how we treat our veterans?
Well, I know that the protesters were really hell-bent on getting their way to get us out of Vietnam. And I do believe that a lot of the protesters now wish they hadn't really been quite protesting as much and taking it out on the troops. And they did. They wanted to take it out on the politicians, Congress mm-hmm. and Senate. But the ones that really suffered were us, the military.
Soldiers,
yeah. Yes. And when, when Jane Fonda came over to Vietnam, very demoralizing. It's like, because I'm one of the biggest patriots there is, still always have been, and it's for God and country. I believe that. And when you feel that some of your country is not behind you, it hurts. Yeah. Really hurts.
I'm sure that made it tougher, especially when you've lost friends over there. Makes it even tougher. So
yes.
Tell me about when you first you enlisted. What happened next? You signed up. Your mom's not happy with you.
Well, she wasn't
anyhow.
No, she was. She wished I wouldn't, but she was behind me
100%. Oh, I'm sure she's proud of you.
So I went to Fort Dix, New Jersey. And I first went there. I was ahead of your serial number. There was an RA for regular Army, which I was, and there was a U.S. if you were drafted. Mm-hmm. And if you were National Guard, you had an NG for National Guard, but we all called it not going. Because the reason then for joining the National Guard, we kind of figured, was to not go to Vietnam. And it left a sour taste a little bit, thinking that that was the reason for the National Guard. Times sure have changed now. Mm-hmm. My friends, three and four tours.
They're over
National
there
Guard.
Right now, aren't they?
Yes. It really changes. And I went from there to advanced training at Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri. We called it Lost in the Woods, up in the Ozark Mountains.
Oh, goodness. Is that the first time you've been out of the state, or had you ever traveled much before?
I had not traveled. I was only 19, so I mm-hmm. hadn't traveled too much, no. In fact, like everybody, on my senior trip, I went to Vietnam from school.
So you end up in the Ozarks.
Well, yeah. Because I was really into this and I volunteered for Airborne. Had planned on being an Army Ranger. But I had amnesia when I was when I was in sixth grade. So I don't know how old I was, but I know I was sixth grade. And they would not let me jump out of the airplane at the high altitude because of the amnesia. So my airborne was down the tube. So I went to Leonard Wood, and I still told them I wanted to go to Vietnam. So they believed me and sent me to Germany.
There could have been a lot of people volunteering to go to Vietnam at that time, I would guess.
No, there wasn't a lot, but it's the Army for you. I should have told them I wanted to go someplace cold, and they just sent me to the jungle.
So you were mostly with people who had been drafted. Were there very many who were signing up by that time, or was it mostly a draft?
It was mostly draft. It was probably like two-thirds drafted to... approximately right in there.
Did you get different responsibilities since you had enlisted? Or was everybody the same once you got over there?
No, we were all the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely the same. We had some people, they had a chance to become go to an NCO school and become an instant, we call them shake and bake NCO. And so, because they were needed and non-commissioned officers because mm-hmm. they were going at a high rate going to downhill in Vietnam. So I was sent to Germany. Then when I was in Germany, I asked if I could go 1049 form it is to Vietnam. So what they did is we went to Africa. And
took you.
So I was in Africa for 30 days and came back, and then my transfer went through. So
what did you do in Africa?
There was a railroad bridge that was washed out in Tunis, right outside of Tunis in Tunisia. So I was with an engineer unit, and we went over there and threw it together.
So you're basically a kid from upstate rural New York, and you're in Tunis, building bridges. That had to be amazing.
Oh, yes, it was. In fact, I said when I met my wife, I told her I was, in the Army, but not Vietnam. So, and I said, "You want to come see my Tunisian Army hat?" I still have my Tunisian Army hat.
You're proud of that?
Yeah.
So how did you finally end up in Vietnam after all these detours?
Well, I don't know if my asking got me to go or not. Or if they just decided that I gave up, so they'd send me. But it wasn't long after beginning of 70 that they let me go to Vietnam. So I came home. I didn't tell my mother I was coming home or anybody. So I flew in Philadelphia, or I flew into Newark, went to Philadelphia, flew home, and there wasn't anybody home. They were all on vacation.
Oh, no. Yeah. Same as that.
So
that was before you were supposed to go to Vietnam? So they let you come home first to see your family again?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it took, I think it was 10-day leave I had.
So did you get to see your family at all?
Yes,
okay.
I did.
Good. Yeah. Well, I feel bad. So you saw your family and you told them you're going to Vietnam.
Yes. And
what'd your mom say?
Well,
I'm a mom. I have to keep asking from the mom's point of view.
Yes. She was a little bit worried, but she's a tough girl. Her husband was in World War II, so she knew I'd be all right.
So you fly back.
I flew out to Anchorage, Alaska, and then to straight from Anchorage to Benoit, Vietnam.
Was that like?
We went to Benoit, and we went over to Long Bend to be dispersed whereabouts you were going to go, and they said don't drink too much because this heat over here, if you have a beer, because everybody comes in wants to go have a nice cool beer to cool off from the heat, they says that you won't be able to handle it. But they did not realize I was from New York and our drinking age was 18 and I was a professional drinker then.
Well, thank God.
So I didn't have any problem having a couple beers.
What kind of beer is it over there?
They had Falstaff and Lone Star and Hams and Olympia.
American beer.
Okay. at the Big Post.
Okay.
And when you got out once later in the villages, we had the Obama Bond. That's 33, and they say it's the one beer to have when you're going to have more than 33. It wasn't. I don't know if anybody ever got drunk on Vietnamese beer.
Not a good idea.
Well, no, you just like drinking water, I believe. It just wasn't that potent. And I could drink when I was 18, but I couldn't vote because I wasn't 21 yet when I came in the service. So I couldn't vote for the...
Isn't that something?
Yes.
At that time, I think that was part of the impetus for changing the voting age, is that there are people over there willing to lay down their lives to protect that right to vote, except they couldn't vote.
They lowered it to 18, but they didn't want them drunk when they voted, so they raged to drink and aged to 21.
You got it all figured out.
Yeah.
So you're over there, you're sampling the beers, you're trying the new foods, or was it American food? What was it like when you went and had your meals?
Oh, well, I was there in Long Bend for 2 weeks, and then I went to assigned me to a unit, my unit, which was in the Delta. And the food in Long Bend wasn't too bad, cafeteria food, because it was a large base. But then when I got to Bentui, things were a little bit different. Food wasn't that good, and I was sent to I was with the 35th Battalion, and I went to the 36th Battalion in Vinh Long, and that was a little bit worse. Yeah, things kept going downhill. So And we get mortared every night.
Let me ask you, what's it like? I mean, do you constantly hear bombs going off in the background? Is there constant noise and activity? How do you feel about what that was like?
Not so much until nighttime. And my first day when I got into Vin Long, the guys told me, he says, okay, now it's a little bit after dark. The mortars will be coming in. They took out, showed me on the berm and where the positions would be on the perimeter. We had sandbags around with our culvert halves and sandbagging. We'd use those. So,
how close did the mortar get to you at night?
Did they
ever take a direct hit where you were?
I didn't know. No, because I only stayed there in Vin Long for like 2 months.
Okay.
And then I volunteered. I volunteered for everything because they had wanted to build a road, take a road about 60 kilometers away, and they wanted some people on the other end where they were going to be, so I was 60 clicks away from the base camp and any airfield cover. We had no Hueys. The closest air support would have been 60 kilometers away. There were six of us that went down there. And we had a regional force, Vietnamese security, and they were rather ruthless. So
these are the people working on the same side as you, the South Vietnamese?
Yes, the South Vietnamese. And I made a lot of friends going with them. That's where how I learned so much to speak Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
I could go out on patrol with them, and they were rather ruthless sometimes. And a few of them were pretty well crazy. They had my first time out. I had on patrol, and one of them, he came back with a bamboo viper wrapped around his barrel. He had an M1 carbine, and I had an M16, which is a two-step snake, and he tied the head of it to the end of the rifle, and it was curled around it, and he's bringing it up, and he's showing me this, and I just, every time he takes a step towards me, I take two steps back. So, anybody was trying to show me, this was my first time out with him, that he had pulled the fangs out of the snake, so it was safe. It couldn't bite me.
Was that to intimidate the enemy? What was
just impress people?
Why would somebody do that?
Because they can. I guess it is to show his courage.
Yeah,
is what it is. I can't explain everything
No, it could be a cultural thing. It could be cultural down there too. So, wow.
And
so you volunteer to build this road. You and six other. Mm-hmm. Did you know you're brave at the time when you're doing that?
Well,
is that considered an act of bravery to say, I'm going to step up?
Oh, sure. I wrote my brother a letter and said that I'm going out into the jungle and I get to carry an M60. I said, that'd be great. How nice it was. Then the next letter I wrote him like that, and I said, well, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. It wasn't. But before that, too, I was at, when I was in Vin Long, it's a free fire zone in the area at nighttime. And we had one of our trucks had hit a landmine. And it was getting close to dark. There was no way you'd get back before dark. And I volunteered to go out and get him, get the trailer off. So I went out, and it had to be dark when I got back. So I kind of really had the full wide open throttle. I went out, and he hit the guys. Two guys in there, they already had the dollies lowered down the trailer, and so I hooked a chain to his truck and yanked the truck out from underneath the trailer, and then I backed underneath and hooked to the trailer and got in, and I'm coming back through. It would have been about 20 clicks out we were, and we come, and I was full wide open. We came into the village where the main base camp was, and I didn't slow up too much, and there was an MP's right around the corner. They had a little MP compound, and they wanted to pull me over, which I wasn't going to back off. I know better at night than to do it. Well, from experience, and I've only been in country 2 months, you learn how to, in a hurry, you learn how to fight and stay alive, and what you have to do quick. You grow up very fast in combat. So when I pulled into the base camp, then I stopped right at the gate as soon as I got in the base camp gate, and he came up through there, and he said, "Where come you in?" He was ticked off or whatever, and I says, "Well, because I know better." I says, but he gave me a ticket, which is an Article 15 in the Army, and I drove up, went from there to our operations, gave this ticket to the first sergeant and says, "I don't want to see anything again like this. I volunteered to go out and get it, put my life in danger, and they want to get an Article 15. So, and I wouldn't have got my nice good conduct medal that I have here if the first sergeant, he disposed, yeah, took care of it for me.
Which one is your good conduct medal?
This one right here, the red one with the white stripes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess that's like never got caught medal. Now I blew that, didn't I? I hope they don't want it back.
No, we'll cut that part out.
So, but the week before that, I was out with my truck and a convoy coming in. The guy ahead of me had a 5-ton trailer, but his spare tire on it is right behind. And when he came through the village, he had the trailer cut short, and it ran over some stuff, and they were upset, and they started shooting at him, and hit the spare tire right in the back. If he'd had a truck like I do, where spare tires on the side, he wouldn't. He'd been on the wall.
That tire protecting him.
But so I know you don't want to mess around out there, and you never know who's the enemy there. It's
that had to be hard. So you went out and you built, you worked on the road. What did you do after
Actually, I went, I didn't, I kind of, I did everything. I was very versatile. I knew how to work explosives and how to repair vehicles. So that's the one reason they asked me to go down. Mm-hmm. So I used C4 and blew some of the trees up and dent cord and wrapped around trees and taken down and stuff. That was lots of fun. I was blowing things up. And there was a MACV with some officers in it. MACV is Military Advisory Vietnam. Okay. Military Advisory Command, MACV. And they were all officers there. Liked it because I'd go down there and I could play pinochle very well, and they always needed that fourth guy for pinochle.
It's an important skill to have.
But they ate very well. See, we'd have sea rations, and they sat there with tables and had tablecloths and were waited on because they were all officers, and at that time I was only a measly E4. Yeah. So I was down there, became close friends with a Navy lieutenant and an Army captain, and they would argue which one had got me for their partner because I was a good pinochle player. The lieutenant flew a fixed-wing airplane. They had just a little short runway, dirt runway. It wasn't even what you call a runway. No lights on it or anything, just where they kept the plane. And we were playing pinochle when the Viet Cong had come in and taken over the Irvin's position where they had their artillery. They spun the artillery around. They were firing at us. Yeah. The South Vietnamese, the Viet Cong was firing South Vietnamese at our compound. So they were, his airfield was the other side of this. So all the Viet Cong were between us. And I said, "I can get you out to your plane," because he says, "I got to get the plane in the air so they don't take it." So I had my own Jeep, which the Seabees procured for me. So my own personal Jeep I had.
Wow.
And I had two different frequency radios on there, which was good because I could listen to different units at the same time. So I got him in there, and a friend of mine, he decided he'd go in with me. So we went through, and I get right through where the Viet Cong were, and it was about 3 clicks down more from the Viet Cong, but they were starting to walk mortar down the airfield. So when we're there, and I'm loading the rockets in his Piper Cub on the book, and he's getting in it, and he takes off when the mortar rounds are coming down. And so then I look at my friend's name's Thompson. I says, we're not in a good position now, are we? So
he should have been on that plane with them.
So I radioed him, and I says, you know, they're getting a little closer to it. He says, don't worry. He says, I'm coming around. And he did. He took them down out for us. Well,
that was a close call.
He was very appreciative of my efforts, and I think he was going to put me in for a medal, Silver Star or something. But he didn't, because the next week or two, well, week and a half, couple weeks, he got shot down. Oh. And was in Tokyo, but he survived. He's been over there for 5 straight years. He was kind of like me, too. He wanted to. So I spent 2 years in a row. I didn't.
Did you stay in the Delta area mostly then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So 2 years in the Delta, not coming back? Or did you rotate in and out? Or?
I spent a year there, came home for 30 days. Okay. That's when the Attica prison riot was, so I didn't get out.
70?
Yeah, so I'd still be used to it, September 71. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I went right back over. I was at we worked up by Cambodia too, so on the southern tier, south of the Parrot's Peak. There, and they had Operation Lesson Learned. That's in May of 70, when Nixon first authorized to go in to Cambodia, because in March, the Cambodia was changed governments to Khmer Rouge, and they kicked told the NVA and the Viet Cong to get out of their country, which of course they did. Mm-hmm. And so we had a new government in Cambodia, and they negotiated. So we went up, Rome Plows went up in our unit, took them up, and were clearing inside Vietnam right up to the Cambodian border in April.
Did you cross into Cambodia?
Then, but we waited, we couldn't cross in April 28th. So we were there for a week before we went in. Our first authorized unit, and we were allowed to go 10 kilometers in. The 9th Infantry, the 11th Armored, they came up from the south of the Parrot's Peak, and the 1st Cav and 1st Army Division came from the north, and we had our great regional force, Irvins, with us. We had a lot of 30,000 troops went into Cambodia. And morale was so high because the enemy, they would come in, attack us, and then run back into Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't do anything with them. They had all their cash order. The first calf took tons and tons of cash, thousands. And that's what our Rome Plows did, was make a road so we could take a truck up in there, because all they had was trails. They built Bailey bridges across where there was no bridge.
So was it really thick jungle?
Yes, it was extremely thick.
How'd you cut through it?
Rome Plow. A Rome Plow is a D7 dozer. Okay. And the blade comes down and curves down, and it would shear the trees off. Okay. Which is good, but the snakes and the monkeys and stuff would fall out of the trees too. So they would have to put poncho liners over top to try and keep them out. And the booby traps, they would instead of having them on the ground, they'd have them at tree heights trying to get the dozer operator.
So that was
operator.
Dangerous operation, too. That was dangerous.
Oh, very, extremely dangerous, yes. Our brigade lost 4 guys, is all, but on the whole operation, there was a couple 300 that lost their lives going in.
Well, how did you manage to stay alive? I mean, you just have good instincts? Did you notice? I mean, you seem like you got always close to the edge, and you survived.
You learned, I knew why I stayed alive, because it wasn't my time. You learn, it's believe in destiny very quick over there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, why did the bullet go right by you and get somebody behind you? It's everything's meant to be, I believe. Yeah. So you
weren't afraid while you were there?
No.
You put faith in God?
And a lot of people, they ask the question, you know, if you're in a firefight, man, it must be scary. And I says, no, it's not. I says, maybe before or after, but not during. It's never, because you don't have time. It's all instinct.
You're in the heat of the moment. You just react. Your training kicks in, right?
Yeah. Oh. And you learn in a hurry, like I said. If you don't, you're going to be one that doesn't come back. We were on a name on the wall in Washington.
So how did you finally come back?
Well, actually, from when we finished that off, and it was when President Nixon was going with peace with honor and was withdrawing troops, so I went to a place called Bantui. We had backed out, had lost a lot. The Navy was there, the Air Force was there, and the Navy was completely gone, the Air Force was. It only left some of us Army guys there, so it was like a weakened position. Oh. And the Viet Cong knew that. So, but then I had almost 2 years over there, so I knew this on April 16th, and I came home May 26th, I came home, so.
We all have images of the evacuation of Saigon, for example, the airlift, getting people out of it. Mm-hmm. Was it like that?
No.
It wasn't.
When we was out in an outpost or smaller camps, nothing changed except you had less units around you.
Mm-hmm. Less protection.
Yeah. Well, we only had one dust off unit left, and that was like 20 kilometers away for any medevac. So we had a rocket come in one night, and I knew they were, or two rockets, excuse me, they one long, one short, and I knew they were measuring up where to hit. So the next night, I had my own personal Jeep, and I had stayed up all night knowing that they're going to come, and they didn't. So when I started my Jeep in the morning, it wouldn't start. Battery was dead because I had the radios going all night.
Might have been snakes in the engine. Yeah, you keep talking about these crazy snakes.
I did have a pet python for a while. And so the following night, I made sure I started my Jeep like every half hour. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I just reached down and started my Jeep, and I looked back up and saw the first rocket coming in. So I ran in to the bunker, got my RTO, my radio technician, Malone, and red-headed Irishman, wild guy. So he got him in my Jeep, and I went up to where the officers were. We had income. By the time I got up there, they had a dead-on hit, the first hit, run our ammo dump. Our ammo dump there was extremely huge because it was still left over from when all the Air Force was there and all the Navy was there. We had 5,000 tons of ammo.
And they hit that?
It hit it dead and
that had
dead
to be
square.
The 4th of July fireworks?
Oh, it was 3 days it was going. By the time I got them down, our captain and two lieutenants, we had to hit the bunker right by them, and we were pinned down. We couldn't get out, and my Jeep was still running right outside.
This is the time you're supposed to be ready to be evacuating and leaving? The time? You knew your time was done.
It was getting close. This was the Easter Offensive that they did.
Okay.
Easter Offensive of 1972, and the NVA and the Viet Cong attacked everywhere in the country pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So, my radio man, it's a good thing I had him with me because now at least we had communications.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there. He spots a couple people pinned down out further. And he says, I got to go out and get those guys. They're right out in the open. They're pinned down. And I says, no. I says, you got the radio. I says, you can keep the radio. So I made him get back in, and I went out and got him. And he came out anyways with me, took the radio off and left it there. And came out with me, and we both then got Bronze Star for valor, but we saved two of their lives out of the guys that were there.
Were they injured, and you had to put them in? What'd you do?
Yeah, we brought them back to the bunker. It was a very heavy shrapnel. It was just thick. You couldn't see between the smoke and the flying steel. It was quite an event. Because well, 5,000 tons, that's 10 million pounds of ammo, to put it in perspective, if you do the math.
Did you ever see the people that you saved again after that?
No. Mm-hmm. No.
Didn't know their names?
No, never did know their names. So I did get a couple little pieces of shrapnel in me, because, and in my Bronze Star write-up it says a wall of shrapnel facing, something to that effect, which was true. But this was in May. I was close to going home, so, and I went home May 26th, and I didn't know I had gotten that Bronze Star for Valor until September. And I got a letter saying, oh, you got a medal. Do you want to go have a ceremony for it, or just mail to me? Well, medals didn't mean anything to us. We always said that 25 cents in a medal could buy you a cup of coffee, because coffee was a quarter then.
So I said,
mail it to me. So they mailed it to me.
Yes. Where is it? Not wearing that?
Yes.
Was that
I got two Bronze Stars.
Okay.
The V for Valor and Oakley for two of them.
Okay.
And an Army Commendation Medal.
What are the other ones? Tell me all these. You told me that one.
What's that one? This one's National Defense. This was Expeditionary for Africa. This is a Vietnam Service Ribbon, and with four stars in it for four campaigns, which, like every 6 months, usually was a campaign. And this is a Vietnam Cross of Gallantry. And this is the Vietnam Campaign. This is these are all unit citations, a presidential unit citation. This is a command unit citation. And this, we get three of these. And this is a civic action citation. Our unit got two of those.
As you're a general when you walked in, you got all this. Looks impressive.
Well, I know. I just wish I could have went to Afghanistan, but my wife wouldn't let me.
I'm feeling. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad your wife overruled you on that. But
that is one reason I did get out too, is because the war was winding down, yeah. And it wasn't. But
could you have stayed?
We had a lot of wound. You know, quite a few people wounded that night, and. So our medics were all busy. For my shrapnel, that's why I don't have the Purple Heart, because I didn't do anything with it, but I still have some fragments still in me. This one is still in me. I can't have an MRI, and I have some in my arm.
What happens when you walk through airport security? Do you go off?
No. If I wear my medals, maybe. But,
after all, you finally came home. What was it like to transition?
A friend of mine wanted me to join the National Guard. But I said, nah, National Guard, no, I don't think so. I have and he says, well, you have all the awards, you know, stuff. And I says, yes, but that left a sour taste in my mouth. For some reason, I just didn't want to join the National Guard at that time. The National Guard isn't like it is now. Mm-hmm. And when I came, I brought back a Chinese Chi-Com rifle from the enemy. It was taken there. When from Cambodia, they gave out 1,000 of these because from this large cache. So, but I had to go to Saigon to clear Vietnamese customs. Then I had to clear U.S. customs, and the MPs had to clear it back for traveling to the United States. So I had all this paperwork for my war trophy, and I carried it back on the airplane.
Covered up?
No.
You're sitting there with a gun on the plane?
Rifle, yes. Rifle. This is 1972.
Yeah. Wow.
And when I got the Travis, and they told us that they recommended we change clothes, I had to stay another day because it was Memorial Day when I got out. So I said, oh, great, I get to stay in this service another day. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. But then I went in San Francisco. I went across Golden Gate Bridge. Flew from San Francisco home. But then there were all kinds of protesters there. We were baby killers. And yeah, so.
Where'd you fly into the Buffalo Airport?
Flew into Buffalo.
And where'd you go from there?
I went home to see my mama. Yeah. 2 years, I hadn't seen Christmas in 2 years. I took a nice picture of me in Vietnam next to our little Christmas tree we had, holding my M16, showing everybody I got a new M16. I care.
That was your mama's Christmas present?
No, that's I had two M16s. I was assigned an M16, but I procured another one the first month. Mm-hmm. And that way I didn't have to ever get that one dirty and didn't have to worry about losing it or anything.
So what was the transition like from that life where you're under the gun, literally? You never know if the mornings are coming in. You don't sleep at night. You're out there starting your Jeep, and you come home, and you finally get to sleep in a bed. How was that? Is that tough to do?
Exactly. I was going to say, because May 28th, I left Vietnam. I mean, April 16th, we almost get overrun. And we did leave Ben Tu and gave and went to Can Tho for the last couple of weeks. And so 3 days later, you're home. There's no debriefing. There is now debriefing, but we had no debriefing. You came home and you went to straight from the foxhole to Frisco, is what we said. And it takes an awful lot to get to to unwind. You never forget. I mean, I've seen, like, especially when I was with the regional forces, like I say, they could do things we couldn't do because we abided by the Geneva Convention. Mm-hmm. And South Vietnamese, more or less, the North Vietnamese definitely didn't, from stuff we had seen. They were actually quite ruthless, but so the South Vietnamese was. And, I've seen, torture from and waterboarding was common. I mean, that's nothing compared to the other torture. You see, where you got people up and for days. And then when you get home, those thoughts are always there, still there. My niece wrote a paper for Genesee Community College when she was going to college. She wanted to know if she could do it on me, and I said, okay. She asked me, how often you think about Vietnam? I said, well, every day. She says, every day? And I says, every day. Still, before my feet hit the floor, when I get out of bed in the morning.
It's always part of you.
Yeah, it's embedded.
Well, I want to tell you, thank you for sharing your story with the Veterans History Project, and I hope that you inspire others to tell their story, because you know what? That's an important part of history. Mm. And I just want to tell you, on behalf of a grateful nation, a long overdue thank you. Thank you for your service and your bravery and willingness to save lives, put yourself out there for us, and I'm sorry we didn't get it right the first time. I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Thank you. I'm still probably one of the best patriots this country has.
I think you are.
For God and country. And I appreciate you taking care of our veterans now.